I want to thank Pastor Mariah last week for highlighting the story of David as we go through this mini-series. We're actually wrapping it up today. We're just talking about imagine if your person, passion, problem, the discipleship that you have lined up and you came in alignment with who you are and what you're created to do and to be and what God is doing in the world. Imagine. And then after all of the merger stuff is kind of done, we're going to go into, okay, we've imagined what discipleship could be like, and if we aligned those things up together, now let's reimagine how we function as an organization and as a church, because we don't have to do things the way we've always done them before. We don't have to do them the way other churches have done them. We can reimagine church. So that's our journey together. Last week, Pastor Mariah had a great line. She said this: I wanted to be the person teenage me needed. I love that line. It was so great. She was aspiring to be the adult that she needed as a child, as a teenager. I've said it this way before: you are best suited to serve the person that you used to be. The growth that has taken place in your life, the transformation that Jesus has caused in you, now you can go serve the person that you used to be. Like, we've all come on a journey. We should not be the same person we used to be 1 year ago, 2 years ago, 15 years, however long ago. We should be constantly in transformation. And now you are best suited to serve the person you used to be. Our person, this is a little recap from the last couple of weeks. Our person is what makes you, you. That's all the experiences you've had, all the decisions you've made, all the decisions that were made for you that you had no control over, all the good things that have happened, all the bad things, that's your person. That's what makes you, you. Our passion is what stirs you. The thing that wakes you up in the morning, that excites you to get going for the day, that helps you, like, have the next step, like, I can't wait to just take on the day because of this. And the problem is what drives you. It's the thing that keeps you up at night because you can't stop thinking about this injustice that's happening, or you can't stop worrying about this thing, this problem that keeps you up at night. So person, passion, problem. Imagine if we had them all in alignment. A couple weeks ago, we started with this little graphic. I like these, like, circles that intersect, and, you know, like, you'll be seeing these things over time because I like visual drawings of perceiving these things. So if we have our person and our passion lined up but not our problem, what we have is a hobby. And hobbies are great. Hobbies are good. Anybody like to golf or do gardening or model trains or, you know, whatever. Those are hobbies that you can have, and there's nothing wrong with them. Sometimes people turn them into a passion where, like, that's the only thing they can think about and the only thing they can do, but really it's just a hobby because it's not solving any real problem in the world. Sometimes people have a passion and a problem that they solve, but what it is the cause, because it doesn't align with who they are. Some people will show up for, like, a food pantry day or just serve meals on Thanksgiving Day. Nothing wrong with those things. I'm telling you, those are good things. Yesterday we had a lot of people solving a problem for the church. We had overgrown beds. We had a lot of stuff in these rooms over here that needed to go down to the fellowship hall over there. They came. They had a passion to do something for the church. The church had a problem. Let's put it together. There's a cause. We can go after it. Great. Thank you to all of those who did that. It was amazing how much transformation there was. I'll be honest with you, I came really late. I was here to open up the building, and then I peaced out for a little while all the work got done. And then I came and go, wow, you guys did great. Now, to be fair, I was at a cross-country meet right down the road, senior year. I'm not missing senior year home meet, okay? So there you go. At any rate, so then the other one is person and problem aligned together. It's a duty. I gotta go do this thing because it's my responsibility to go do this thing. I'm not super passionate about it. The only way out of this thing is if I die, you know, like, so the duty kind of thing. But imagine if we had them all together working in alignment, the person God created you to be, the passion that you have, solving the problem that God created in you to solve. And so we're going to talk about problem today. Last week, Mariah talked about passion. The week before that, we were looking at person. So if you missed those, go back and listen to those sermons. You can find them out on the internet somewhere. God has created a good work for you to do. Ephesians chapter 2:10 says this: For we are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. You have a good work that you are uniquely called and created for. The word workmanship in that scripture is the Greek word poema, and it's work of art, that God has created you a work of art. Michelangelo was once asked what he was doing as he chipped away at a shapeless rock, and he replied, "I'm liberating an angel from this stone." That's what God is doing in you and in me. God's doing that within us. He's like recreating you, transforming you into something beautiful that maybe nobody else can see. The other word in there is good works. It's ergon is the Greek word. It means occupation, to work or toil. What you, as a beautiful workmanship piece of art that God has created, what are you meant to go do? God has created something for you to do in advance. Imagine if our discipleship process becomes finding the masterpiece, discerning the kingdom calling within all of you, and walking into that kingdom assignment that your person, your passion is uniquely called to do to solve a problem in our community and in our world. It's not just going to be Sunday school. Sunday school's not bad. But what if we transformed into something beautiful that is solving something beautiful? We need to capture an imagination for discipleship that allows us to live in alignment with how God has shaped us to be. We've been looking at David over the last couple of weeks and seeing his person, passion, problem. And so this week we're going to look at problem most specifically. And I think every week we've touched on the David and Goliath story. I mean, it features prominently in the David narrative, and it's prominent in our culture as well. David versus Goliath is a big thing. So we're going to really focus in on that and really see what the problem David was trying to solve. So here's David. He's out in the fields. He's watching over his dad's sheep. And his dad is like, "Hey, come on in, son. I want you to take bread and cheese to your brothers. They're out at the front lines getting ready to fight the Philistines." Now, that whole scenario seems crazy to me. I would not want to go to the front lines of anywhere, especially if all I have is bread and cheese to defend myself. And we these days, like, we send care packages, right? Like, we do that, but it was different in those days. Anyway, so he goes, and here's what the passage says after that. I'll be in 1 Samuel 17 the rest of our time. So if you have a Bible or an app or something, you can open that up. 1 Samuel 17. Here's verse 21 through 26. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines facing each other. David left his things, the bread and cheese, with the keeper of the supplies, ran to the battle lines and asked his brothers how they were. As he was talking about them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance, and David heard it. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great fear. Now the Israelites had been saying, "Do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his family from taxes in Israel." Not a bad deal. David asked the men standing near him, "What will be done for this man who kills the Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And that last line is where it's all at for David. You have to read that line with righteous indignation. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? David had this faith in God that was deep and abiding. He spent long hours out in the field praying, listening, worshiping, observing, developing a relationship with God. And he credited God for giving him the ability to kill a bear and a lion in order to protect the flock while he was a shepherd. He had faith that God could do anything and that God could do everything. David trusted God implicitly. And when he saw the people of the Philistine army questioning God, and then the Israelites doing nothing about it, it stirred up his passion to solve that problem. He credited God for this ability to be able to solve this own problem. For David, the problem wasn't, if we lose this battle, we risk losing our national identity and we're going to be slaves of the Philistines. That's not the problem for David. For David, the problem was, what are these people saying about God? It made him angry. Let's just pause for a moment and say, what if our motivation was, as a people, what did they say about God? Excuse me? What did you just say about God? I think sometimes we let what they say about God influence what we believe about God and how we interact with God and how we show up for other people and with God. That's just an aside, probably a whole nother sermon about that. I'd say give that some thought. For David, this giant problem that they had on their hand was not, in fact, a physical barrier. Rather, for David, it was a spiritual barrier. David starts asking around, what's up with this guy? Why isn't anybody doing anything about what he's saying about our God? And he keeps asking, and he keeps asking until someone sends him to King Saul. And he and King Saul have this exchange, and Saul's like, you're just a boy. What can you even do to solve this problem? Who do you think you are? That guy, Goliath, he's been a warrior since his youth. Have you ever heard those words? Either externally or internally, who do you think you are? Why do you think you can solve this problem? What can you even do? You're just one person that lives in Licking County. Even the name of your county is dumb. Let's be honest about that. You don't have what it takes. You're a nobody. You don't have enough experience. You aren't big enough. You can't get it done. You are not enough. You can't do this. It's called imposter syndrome, where you feel like you're an imposter. You don't even belong in the same room as everybody else. And you limit yourself because you say, who am I that I could pretend to solve this problem? Well, let's read how it went down. Here's verses 38 through 39. Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. He's like, whatever, buddy. Give it a shot. Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic. He put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on the sword over the tunic, and he tried walking around because he was not used to them. I cannot go in these, he said to Saul. He's like, I can't do this. I'm not used to these things. So he took them off. Have you ever tried to do it someone else's way? Have you ever tried to do it like someone else has solved this problem this way, so I'm going to too? You see how somebody else has navigated through this situation in life, so you think, well, that's the way I've got to do it too. Work for them. Churches and pastors are notorious for this. We'll go to a conference and we'll see some church that grew 1,000% in 4 weeks and be like, that's the program we're going to do. And we bring it back and we're like, this tunic doesn't fit. This doesn't fit our situation. This isn't how it works for us. It's like putting on somebody else's armor. It won't fit us. It just doesn't work on our body. Have you ever tried to solve your problem using someone else's solution? You look at it and go, work for them. That's probably the thing I should do too. Saul wanted to give David the Saul solution. We need to reimagine what solutions look like in our context. Okay, there's an aspect of this where we try to adopt other people's ways. Now, think about another way, same situation, same circumstance. There's another aspect of this where other people heap up expectations on you that limit you from being who you need to be. They put this whole thing on you because you need to do it the way they did it. You need to do it how we've always done it. You need to do it because it worked for them. So now I expect you to line up with what I think you ought to be. But if Saul's way would have worked, I'm guessing it would have worked a long time before this happening. Instead, David needed to do it the way David needed to do it. Furthermore, I think David needed to do it in a way that it showed it wasn't actually David at all. It was God who showed up, and God who made this thing happen. It was God doing it all along. That's what we've seen here with three churches coming together. This is bigger than one church, two churches. is bigger than the pastors and the leadership. This is not about me. It's not about Pastor Mariah. It's not about Pastor Kevin. It's about what God is doing in all of us together to come together as one unified body in our diversity. We've all been created in the image of God, and everything you need to solve the problems in front of you already exists inside of you. It already lives within you because of the redemptive work that Jesus has done in your life. And so look what David did. That very last sentence of the verse, he took them off. So he took them off. Let's just say it right out loud. You have to take off what other people put on you. You have to take off the lies that are in your head, those limiting beliefs. You have to take off the expectation of others that keep you from being the person God has created to be, living the passions that you have and solving the problem that you were meant to solve. Guys, that was the most passionate part of the sermon. I expected a little more. You have to take that off. David put it off. We have to take it off too. So he took it off. Verse 40. He took his staff in his hand, chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of a shepherd bag, and with a sling in his hand, he approached the Philistine. So what David did was went back to what he knew. He went back to the person he was created to be. He did what was natural to him, who God created him to be. He had the solution right within himself. He didn't need all the other stuff. He didn't need all this armor, all this protection. Just go out and be himself and see what God would do. Isn't that risky? Is it risky for him to do that? Yes, very risky. But remember, the problem that David was trying to solve wasn't about life and death. It was, what are people saying about God? Here's a little exchange that happens between Goliath and David. This is verse 43 through verse 47. And he said to David, Goliath said to David, am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his God. Come here, he said, and I'll give you your flesh to the birds and the wild animals. There's a long passage coming up, so just bear with me. But listen to how many times David credits God. David said to the Philistine, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I'll give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. Look how many times David gives God credit for the whole thing. I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. And all those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. You see how for David, this isn't a problem for the army. This is a problem for God to solve. He's just waiting for someone to be aligned with their person, passion, and problem to go out and risk it. And simply, by David defeating the giant, the problem is solved in 1 second. And everyone knows that when David wins, it was God who made it happen, because on his own, David could not do it. Everyone has a problem that they must solve. And it might be huge. It might be something incredible. It might be a giant. It also may not be. It may be something small. It might be something little. It may be just something in your own home that needs to be repaired. I don't know what it is, but I believe it when it says there's a good work prepared in advance for you. Back in 2014, a friend of mine who was buying a set of buildings downtown, he called me and told me about his girlfriend. His girlfriend was a single mom who was in nursing school. She would take her son to McDonald's on 21st Street to let him play in the playland there while she studied. She'd work on her degree. And he asked me this question, can the church do better? Can the church do better than McDonald's to give space for single moms to work on their degree and create a life for themselves and their families? Can the church do better than culture around us to help an unwed mother find her way in the world so she can create a life for her son? Our entire faith revolves around an unwed mother with a son. You know what I mean? Can the church do better? And so we set out to solve that problem. And it took a long time, actually, for us to get there. About 3 years later, we created something called Little Arrows Play Cafe. So we did it. We created this play space that was better than McDonald's. And the food was arguably better for you than McDonald's. The staff was way nicer than the staff at McDonald's. No offense if you worked there. The connection and community that we had was better than McDonald's. We had the soft opening event that was about 3 hours long. We had 300 people show up, and the air conditioning went down in late June. It was a mess. It was a nightmare. But we knew we were onto something because people showed up. And one of the first people we met was Christina. She's here this morning. Christina was not a single mom, although her husband is an airline pilot, so it often feels like she's a single mom. She came with two daughters, Vera, who was about three at the time, and Olive, who hadn't quite turned one yet. Olive was born with a lot of needs that we will never know or understand. She had three major surgeries in her tiny little body before we had even met Olive. But on that day in the Play Cafe, Christina booked the first ever birthday party. It was like, wow, hey, we're going to make money. All right. Unfortunately, Olive got sick and had to go to the hospital, and they were not able to have their birthday party at Little Arrows that day later on in the summer. And so instead, she used that as a deposit and turned it into our first annual pass that we ever sold at Little Arrows Play Cafe. And so because of that, we got to know Olive and Vera and Christina a lot over the course of the next 2.5 years. Christina joins a mom's group that we started that did Bible studies and shared life together. She developed a community of friends that surrounded her, and especially when she would need to take Olive to the hospital. Little Olive had good days and bad days, and she would do well, and sometimes she would struggle. But this little community built up with all these women who were journeying together through life. In February of 2020, I got a call from Christina's small group leader, Danya, at about 4:30 in the morning. She said she'd come to the ER with Christina because Olive had taken a turn for the worse and was really sick, and that Christina's husband, who I mentioned was an airline pilot, he was away. She just asked, could I pray for Olive? And of course, I did. Then at 5 a.m., I got another call with an update. Olive wasn't doing well, but I said, should I come in? And she said no. And then it really wasn't 5 minutes later. And I got another call from Danya that little Olive had about 3.5 years old and passed away. And so I went as fast as I could to get to the hospital and sit with Christina and Danya and just cry. That's all we could do. Just cry together as Christina held the lifeless body of her baby. Something interesting started happening, though. Over the next 10, 15 minutes, one by one, the other moms from that small group of hers started filing into the room. There were no words spoken. What could we say? We just simply cried together. Only hugs and tears were exchanged in that small, dark emergency room at Lickey Memorial. And this community of women who had been doing life together, who had celebrated birthdays together, who studied the Bible together, who learned about Jesus together, who complained about their husbands together, who raised their children together, now mourned together because one of their own was mourning the loss of their child, experiencing the deepest pain that a parent can experience. And I backed up against the wall, quite frankly, to observe this horrifically beautiful scene as the church became the church. I later reflected on it. If not for Little Arrows, what would have happened with Christina and Olive that night? Everyone in that room was a relationship that was built because of Little Arrows. And the church most certainly did better than McDonald's that night. We thought we were going to solve this problem in the community for single moms to make a life for themselves and for their kids. And instead, we ended up solving a loneliness problem for moms who were needing to make a connection with one another. We provided a space for kingdom-style community for women who could lean on each other in their most devastating times and could celebrate each other with each other in their best of times. And that's all we could do. We could just create the space, create the environment, and then let God do what God can do. David couldn't kill the giant on his own. He could only prepare the environment. He could only pick up the stones. He could only wear the clothes that were natural to him. And you have to realize that that's what you need to do too, that you belong, that this is the thing you're meant to do. Get rid of that imposter syndrome telling you that you don't belong here. You aren't enough. You don't have what it takes. You need to stop adopting other people's ways of doing it. Do it the way that's right for you. And you have to put off the expectations of others. Stop letting their limiting beliefs limit you. And that's all we are asking you to do. As you align your person, your passion, and the problem you're meant to solve, just pick up your five smooth stones. What are they for you? And then let God do the rest. Let God do it. What if we all captured an imagination for that? Imagine what it would be like aligning ourselves with the person God created us to be, the passion God has put within us, and the problem you're meant to solve. Is it risky? Yes, it's risky. It was really risky for us to start Little Arrows Play Cafe. But even if the story I shared about Christina, Olive, and Vera was the only story that I have, it would be worth it to do it all over again. We must align ourselves with who God created us to be and the things that He's made us excited about so that we can go forward and solve problems in our community that only God can solve when we are willing to be the people who pick up five smooth stones and we just say, "Here I am. Send me. I'll go."